evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to your Jersnet weekly podcast hosted by myself, Craig Gray, the independent Rangers podcast made for fans by fans, and all of our content is absolutely free. You can get us over on Twitter at Jersnet Online and the website at jersnet.co.uk. You have access to a forum, some articles, and a wonderful history archive as well. We are live on YouTube this evening, folks, and we'll be on all of your other podcast providers in the near future as well. Please do get involved, guys. Like and subscribe to the channel and share with all your friends. And if you must as well, please get involved in the conversation, in the comments, and with the polls that Frankie will put out. Just before I introduce our guest for this evening, I also need to give a shout out over at our sponsors at Forest Precision Engineering. They are a subcontract Glasgow-based engineering company, and have been a big commercial supporter of Rangers and the pod for many years, and we're absolutely delighted that they're backing us. You can get them over at forestprecisioneng.com, and you can also visit the Forest Precision Executive Lounge, a stunning new hospitality area within the historic main stand. For information on how to book this unique and intimate space, you can email the club via hospitality@rangers.co.uk. Joined tonight by the wonderful Stuart Weir to discuss the thriller in Falkirk. How's your weekend been, mate?
Roller coaster esque. From watching the Grand National yesterday and watching the Masters over the last couple of days, I didn't think anything could quite match those two events until I watched events from Falkirk this afternoon and then realised that my ups and downs weren't over and we'd continue for the next 2 hours. But no, it's been a good weekend. One member of the family managed to win a pretty Grand National winner yesterday, which was quite good. Then decided that what they were going to do with their winnings, given the fact that they hadn't actually paid me any money for putting the bet on in the first place. They took exception to me saying it was actually my money and was going to continue to be my money. But that's another story for domestic matters only.
We've all been there, mate. We've all been there. Starting off with the game today, we'll go off with the 11. A few changes from last week. They won it right back. Tav coming in for Sterling. We'll start negatively and talk about Tav then. Why not? Because we've got all the positivity for the rest of the show, so let's be negative for the first wee bit. I mean, was there any surprises in the changes? Obviously, Big Giga came in for Suter. I think that was needed. But I think I expected to have to play, but this whole plastic surface thing with Sterling, I mean, I don't like the pitches and I'm glad that they're going to be taken away, but it's also a problem if you're basically refusing to play a player in the three pitches in the top flight that I've got at.
Yeah.
So you're effectively rolling him out like 6+ games a season already.
Yeah, I completely get the whole thing about plastic pitches and how it helps communities. But if you want to be a community club, go and play in a Sunday league. You know, football is meant to be played on grass. If it had been any other surface, they could have put, you know, way back when, in the 1870s or thereabouts, they could have played it on wood, they could have played it in sand, they could have played it in concrete, they could have played it in tarmac, anything at all they wanted to play it on. The fact is, it was a game played on grass and it should always continue to be played on grass. And the point you made there, Craig, absolutely relevant, that if you are basically negating a player or players because they can't play on a certain surface, I think that says more about the surfaces they're playing on than the actual players, if they're risking injury by playing on that surface. And the fact that they're more handicapped in Scotland than anywhere else tells you exactly where Scottish football is.
Yeah. Lots of things. I mean, the wind as well, we were being told was a factor in how we went 2-0 down after about 20 minutes. But yeah, first 20 minutes or so, we were all raging. Like a lot of games this season, and I know, look, we have done well the last few games, scored lots of goals, but we're starting games, you know, not so much poorly, but it's like there's just nothing there. There's no aggression, there's no tempo. And although we found ourselves 2-0 down after 20 minutes, I did text my dad and saying, I don't actually think we played that bad, but it was like, it was a nothing performance, if you know what I mean. We didn't deserve to be 2-0 down, but at the same time, we didn't deserve to be winning the game. And that first goal, I mean, it's, you know, that left-hand side again, we've spoken about it for years. I mean, I've backed Tav a lot, but he was absolutely honking for that first goal when he was pretty poor for the whole game. So I'll let you get your rant about him out the way.
No, I'm finding it impossible to say anything new about him. You know what you're going to get, and that is usually, you know, world-class goals interspersed with somebody who plays as if they haven't previously been introduced to association football. The first two, well, go back to the point you made there about the start that Rangers have made, or made in this game. Games where Rangers have made an aggressive start, they've actually been quite comfortable in them. You know, they maybe got a goal or a couple of goals. I think back to maybe the Hearts game at Ibrox, where Rangers started at a decent pace with a decent level of aggression. And I think if you're going to play anybody in Scottish football, that is a way to tackle them. It's not like European competition where you play your way into a game and teams back off and stand off you and might go for a very low block, and you get time to pass the ball around and warm up. You don't get that in Scottish football. I thought the Falkirk press was absolutely magnificent in the first half, hence the reason why there were two goals up. And you just didn't get Rangers time to settle. The goals that Rangers conceded, again, there's a catalogue of goals like that this season. An early goal. It's hard enough to play games against some of these teams without giving away a goal in the first 10 minutes. In this occasion, it was 6 minutes. And then by the time 20 minutes or 21 minutes is up, you're 2-0 down. So I think Rangers have got to be on the front foot from the off. I think they've got to be much more aggressive in their style and the sort of passion that they show. And it would make life a hell of a lot easier. The other thing is, you cannot give opposition two goals of a start to then decide, yeah, listen, we really need to start playing here. We went back into this game. I mean, other teams would be 2-0 up and you would not get back into the game. In fact, you might even lose another couple of goals. So I think the start is all important. And today, you know, Rangers teetered on losing that game and losing it in the first 45 minutes, which is unacceptable for any team at any time, but never mind one that's actually supposedly going for the championship.
Yeah, I mean, Falkirk are a decent team as well. They've had a really good season, and they've got a young squad, an energetic squad, a squad that's fearless. I think that's a good word to describe them. And they've got a lot of talent. That second goal, I mean, all right, we're really poor and we give the ball away, I think, but it's a good finish by their man. I think it was that Finn Yates. He's a decent player. They've obviously got the uni student, Barney Stewart, up front, who's been scoring a barrel load for them recently. So they've got a good core of young Scottish players, and, you know, give credit to them for their season, but I think we should definitely be looking at maybe bringing one or two of these guys in the summer and try and maybe build up that Scottish core. And, I mean, according to John McGlynn, about half the Falkirk squad are Rangers fans anyway, so they'd fit in.
Well, there is that, and I've said it before on this programme. It was, there's a snobbery that if you're Scottish, you might not be good enough because you're actually playing in a Scottish league or a Scottish context, which I've always found rather alien. You know, you look at players that have made it in Scottish football and going forward, some of them have actually been quite good. You know, people seem to forget that for all these, he's performed at a really high level, and probably will continue to do so for a couple of years. Andy Robertson started off at Queen's Park and then went to Dundee United before he got moved to England. So there's players in Scotland that actually can do a job. And I think it's maybe time. I think this is down to the scouting, and also the fact that it's down to actually watching people with your own eyes. rather than going on the stats or some the latest app or package that you can put on your phone that tells you how far somebody runs, what they've had for their dinner, how many times they sit in the toilet, what they drink when a night out, all that kind of stuff. I think sometimes you actually physically need to watch people with your own eyes to see what they do. And I think there's a couple of decent players in Scottish football that would be well worth looking at long before you bring in some guy that's got an O or an I at the end of his name and makes him sound kind of fancy.
No, definitely. And after we lost that second goal, Stuart, was thinking that our views would have been through the roof tonight, or the Celtic, and maybe even Hearts fans would have been tuning in as well. Could have had a record for views tonight, but I mean, I'm not looking at the figures, but you know, nobody will be watching us now because we made the comeback. But we did get a goal back. Chukwuane, it was a really weird goal. Asgard does really well, hits the post, comes back out, think it hits the post again. Comes out and Chukwuane slams it into the top of the net. You know, first things first, it was a sense of relief because I still had a feeling we could come back into the game at some point in the second half, looking at what we'd done at Livy a few weeks ago. But, you know, the longer it goes on without scoring a goal, obviously the more you feel, right, this isn't going to be your day. So to get that goal back just before half-time, I think then allowed us to make the tactical tweaks at half time and then go forward. But in terms of the goal itself, there's been a few people mourning from the other side, shall we say, about balls not being in play. I mean, to be honest, the angle that we were given on the TV, it looks in. Falkirk players just stop. John McGlynn said he was angry about it, play to the whistle. And we take advantage of it. Now, this is the issue with VAR, because when the referee or the linesman has given that on-field decision, because VAR is a poundland version up here in Scotland and we don't have the correct technology to apply it properly, you cannot tell whether that ball is going to be in or out of play with the type of VAR that we have got. And Rangers have actually offered to pay to help bring in new and better systems, but all the other clubs don't want to listen to us. So maybe this was one part of VAR that maybe actually went for us today, for it being such a crappy version up here. But to be honest, that angle that we are given, it looks in. I mean, it could have been, you don't really know without the proper angles being there. But at the end of the day, you know, the SPFL don't want to pay for it. So what can you do?
I think the point you made there about the Falkirk manager actually picking up on not whether the ball was in or out, but the fact that his players stopped playing was as damning as anything. I think that he basically, you know, you play to the whistle, his team stopped. Whether it's in or out, you still have to play at that moment in time. Another thing was, if you actually look at the position of the linesman, he is standing behind the corner flag. The only thing that he could have given as an excuse was that he couldn't see the ball or the flight of the ball because his view was interrupted by the corner flag. And that was never going to happen. So, not that I was confident. I was actually thinking to myself, maybe this is an opportunity for Scottish football to come up with a completely new angle or take on how VAR works by ruling out a goal where they had no evidence whatsoever. Oh no, wait a minute, they've done that before. But you know, I was actually waiting for the goal to be chalked off. Maybe I'm just a pessimist.
You're not, Stuart, sorry, because I cannot tell you one Rangers fan that when you hear that, oh, that's going to VAR to be looked at, that's thinking we are going to get that goal. So it's not just
maybe actually I was an optimist until VAR, so that tells you everything you want to know about technology. But when the goal was given, two things. One, it gave Rangers a path back into a game that honestly 44 minutes into the game, you just didn't see where the goal was going to come from. I know you said you were confident Rangers could come back. You were the only person that I've ever spoken to today that actually thought that. So a goal coming at a time where, you know, you least expect it, Falkirk probably least expected it as well, gave Rangers a real shot in the arm, getting into the second half. And also the fact, you know, from two goals down, you're looking at, will you ever get back into the game? All of a sudden, you're kicking off the second half. You only need another goal, and all of a sudden, you're right back in it again. And it made such a difference, that goal. The timing of the goal and the fact that it was allowed to stand gave Rangers a toehold in the match again.
Yeah, absolutely. We get into half-time 2-1 down, and then Danny Rowe earns his wages with his tactical move going up to 4-4-2 again. He took Mikey Moore off. I love Mikey Moore, but he was rubbish today, just say it how it is. Brings on Miovsky, 2 up top again, 4-4-2. We all love to see it. And that is what I like about Danny Rowe as well. He's tactically flexible. He's no scared to make changes at half-time, and he's had to do it a fair few times this season, which is obviously long-term, it's no very good. But
well, Craig, I'm interested in what you say there, that he's tactically, you know, he's eyeing the ball and all the rest of it. Surely, if he was that good, he would actually start with that team in the first place rather than having to make changes.
True, so, but I do think he's maybe guilty of overthinking things at times. And I have said that before, like with the Motherwell and the Hibstraws, you know, I thought he overthought it a wee bit. And I think maybe he's going, well, we do two strikers, we're not getting any other fit ones. So if you know, it doesn't work for whatever reason in the first half, then we need to go back to one up front and all that. Yeah. So he's probably overthinking it. But I do think we should be playing with that for the start. Just play your best team for the start.
Yeah, listen, it's not something I would align myself with, you know. You've only got two strikers, therefore we need to keep one in reserve in case one gets injured, given the fact that 40 years ago, Graeme Souness would utilise Richard Goff as a striker when needs must, so it can be done. But, you know, I'm still not 100% convinced that Danny Rowe picks a team and says, right, this is what we're going to do. Let's go out and execute it. It's almost as if he needs to find out the hard way that things are not working and make the changes. And listen, you know, again, if you've got anybody who's doing, is watching matches for you, I remember back in the day when you and Chester would go and watch matches for Walter Smith, or he'd send other people like John Brown to go and watch matches and the likes, and they would come back and they would see things and pass them on to the manager. And would make the changes or make amendments and bring different guys in or give them a different role in particular matches, simply because they knew that it would, what the opposition would do, and they knew how to almost counter that before they kicked the game off. So I'm not 100% convinced that he's some tactical genius. The overthinking thing, listen, better than Danny Rowe has done it. Exhibit A, Pep Guardiola in a Champions League final. So it can happen from time to time, but I still think that after another maybe unexpected victory, after 44 minutes today, I still think Danny Rowe is working a minor miracle, getting a tune out of some of these players and some of the players he's got in this squad, because, you know, it's only a matter of months ago. It was interesting that Rangers produced a performance like that today at Falkirk, given the fact that it was a game against Falkirk that basically sounded the death knell for Russell Martin. And that alone tells you the difference between how Rangers are performing as a team and as a unit compared to what they were doing when Russell Martin was in charge. The fight wasn't there. The grit and determination wasn't there. I still don't think it's an abundance, but there's more of it now, hence the reason why Rangers went on to score 6 goals and win the game comfortably in the end, rather than basically, you know, setting up shop and trying to get a draw out of a game. They really should have started, or they should have been favourites to win from the off.
Yeah. One thing in the first half, I mean, that was a positive, even when Falkirk were 2-0 up, that was at least every time they went in an attack, you could see the car park where Russell Martin got attacked. And then that kind of half cheered you up when you looked over there.
I think that was unique just to you.
I'm a very sick individual.
Yeah, when I got the message through this afternoon, that was your sort of train of thought. I'm thinking, listen, anything untoward happens in this country in the next couple of weeks, I'm giving his name and address to the police to get rude, check him up. If you're thinking like that about a game taking place on the pitch and you're looking into the distance and seeing a car park, you take a bit of watching.
I'll be masked up anyway, mate. It's fine. Listen, I wasn't on that pitch last month, guys, okay? I mean, I sit in an upper tier, so it was physically impossible for me to get done unless I done a Celtic fan and chucked myself off it. Moving on swiftly, the changes are made.
Can I say something yes. about that? I was sitting at Celtic Park and I thought it was a coat that had fallen out of the stand. But somebody dripped a coat over the edge of the stand. And I looked at it and I went, nah, somebody's lost their coat. And all of a sudden, there's a guy getting lifted up again. I'm like, how the hell do you manage to do that? Now, listen, there are a few times where you've come close to maybe doing that. I have to say, except at St Etienne's old stadium, where even just standing up made it as if you feel as if you were falling into the surrounds on the track, but it was not a good sight that day, especially when you're going, oh, you've lost your coat, oh no, it's a guy. But anyway, I digress.
Well, no, I mean it is easily done. For anyone that's lucky enough to have been to, it's the hospitality in the club deck. There are other options available, guys, including that. There's like a wee sort of, it's not even like a barrier over it, it's like a wee bit of shaky, not even metal plastic thing. And you think, my God, if you're absolutely hammered on the unlimited booze in hospitality, you're going over it.
You can through that wee door, half expect to see Matthew Kelly on the other side saying, tonight, Matthew, will be mostly, the Bay City Rollers or whatever it is. And once you've been in there and you're suitably inebriated, you're right. I remember back to a couple of times I've been in there and it's heart and mouth time. You make sure you sort of back around that corner where you're back on the wall so you don't go too far near the edge.
Oh, brilliant. Some chat we get on this show, eh? But no, changes are made. We start the second half a lot better. The aggression's there. Gassama, that second goal. Two great bits of play, first from Gassama and then the finish by Chermiti. And I think it was James McFadden that mentioned it on commentary that if he just sort of side foots that or lets it roll off his boot on the ground, it's an easy save for the keeper. But you actually notice that he lifts it. And look, for a guy, I mean, everybody would have been shouting all sorts to him at half time, especially after it was a good free kick, to be fair, from Asgard, that one off the training pitch that he absolutely skied. But It's just what the guy does. He'll miss ones like that, and then it's a great finish, and he's frustrating as anything. But great to see him score, and also great to see him score against a team that isn't the Hearts or Celtic.
Well, I will repeat myself. For me, strikers, it's not necessarily how many goals you score; it's who you score them against and when you score them. And I have to say, the goals that he got today came at a good time. The first one, Rangers have managed to somehow get back into the game just after half time. He turns up, pops up. My son quickly reminded me of everything I'd said in the first 47 minutes before Chermiti actually scored that goal. But again, that was Rangers back into the game. And he might be learning. He may actually learn or have learned the hard way that there are certain things you do when you're trying to score goals that if it doesn't come off with you, you have to change it. You can't. Not all finishes are going to be the same every time. Sometimes you need to lift it. Sometimes you need to aim high. Sometimes you need to aim low, aim wide. You just have to make sure that your first touch or your contact touch is precise, and it gives you half a chance. I think too many times since he's moved to Rangers, he has come across as a hit and hope merchant. He may, but then again, if you have that many chances, you're going to score spectacular ones in amongst the ones you miss. And I do think, you know, he'll be remembered for some great goals, but equally some of the misses have been absolutely appalling. But today he got the right measure, the right level, and scored goals when he had to score them.
Yeah, and I think as soon as that equaliser went in from Chumney, there was only going to be one team in it, and there was only going to be one team winning that game. It was like a blitzkrieg, you know, 3 goals in, what, 12 minutes or something like that, we fought, killed the game, but yeah, we've got more drama to come later on, guys. But we then take the lead a couple of minutes later. Raskin, see, this is what happens when he actually goes forward. I hate him when he's in that sort of 6 role and he's just, you know, passing the ball backwards and side to side. And yeah, maybe you do need players to do that, but some of the games, like, especially if you're at home at Ibrox against like a team in the bottom half of the table in Scotland, you know, why are you constantly passing the ball back and being negative? What he done today, he's got that in his locker. He can do that. You've seen it last season when he really became a top player under Barry Ferguson. He's got a couple of goals now in 2 or 3 games after scoring a couple of weeks ago. So he's another one that's he's hitting form at the right time after having a pretty poor start to the season.
I've never subscribed to this, or he's a 6 or an 8 or a 10. You know, for me, if you're a midfielder, you should be a 6, an 8 and a 10 all in one player, regardless of who you are. You know, and I think if you look at the great Rangers midfielders over the last, you know, 25 years or you know, 30 years, you look at what they had in their armoury. You look at Van Bronckhorst. I mean, Van Bronckhorst would tackle a charging bull elephant, but would then go up to score and score a goal with, you know, great panache and great poise. Look at George Alberts. Oh, he's 2 one-footed. Listen, people I know a left foot like that only ever need to use their left foot. And Ian Ferguson would absolutely nail the opposition's best midfielder, probably stamping them at the same time, and then go up and score one for 25 yards. So for me, this whole, you know, categorising guys, or he's a 6, he's holding, he's defensive. No, if you're in the midfield, you really do need to get back and forward. You need to be box to box. And I know at times somebody has to sit, but if somebody's sitting, the other guy goes forward. If somebody else goes forward, you don't all charge forward. It's not a charge in the late brigade, unless needs must. But the fact is, I think that Raskin is one guy who has that ability. He's got a guile to create goals. He's got a guile to score goals. And he's also got that cheer, anybody saying that they're in a particular position. For me, anyway, midfielders have to be able to do everything. All right, you might be slightly more defensive, but when the opportunity comes, you've got to be able to strike the ball from 25 or 20 yards, and you've also got to be able to, you know, get on the end of things, get into the box. And I think that's crucial just now, especially when teams are happy to sit back and try and absorb a bit of pressure and a bit of punishment, because they know they might be able to hit you in the counter-attack. I think the more people you've got that can score goals, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been really good the last few weeks, and I think, generally speaking, the squad is now starting to hit form at the right time, whereas other teams might be getting over the line. But I think some of the performances recently for Celtic and Hearts, you know, even their own fans are saying, are worried about it. And yeah, I do know that at this stage of the season, it's all about winning, yada, yada, yada. But at this moment in time, we seem to be getting the winning and performance for most of the game, at least, right? And we're scoring a barrel load of goals, but that's what, 14 goals in 3 games. And we're getting goals from all over the pitch now. So,
you know, they're having to score 14 goals. They're not being funny. They're having to score 14 because the ones are giving away. You know, I still think I'm maybe a disciple of the Graham Souness way of thinking, and maybe even the Walter Smith way of thinking, that if you're defensively tight, you only need one goal to win a game. It's maybe dull, it's maybe boring. You don't get marked for artistic oppression. This isn't ice skating or gymnastics. You know what I mean? You win games by scoring goals. Rangers are scoring a lot of them. As I say, they might have to. But the fact is that at this time of the season, others are managing it by playing badly but grinding out results. And I think today, you were talking about the viewing figures tonight and who might be watching us. I think there might be one or two people will be sitting watching the golf rather than listening to you and I, simply because it was the fact is that Rangers won a game convincingly in the end that, you know, approaching half-time today, someone would be ready to pop with champagne corks and basically say the bottle has gone again. Unfortunately for them, fortunately for Rangers and Rangers fans, Rangers came good.
Yeah, I mean, technically we got one better than Hearts and Celtic this weekend on the goal difference, so considering we were 2-0 down after 20 minutes, it's not been a bad weekend after all. Five games left and we just need to keep winning. I do think, no, we're talking about, you know, grinding out results and performances. We do have the toughest fixtures and the split, having to go to Tynecastle and Parkhead. But I'm pretty confident in this team that we can go and get results there. I said on Friday when I was on with Rob, I think out of the six games, I think four wins and two draws away to Hearts and Celtic probably just gets us over the line. We've got one of the ones there now, but could just keep it simple and win the next five games, and you know you're guaranteed a party at Falkirk at the middle of me.
Well, to be honest, Celtic and Hearts are only looking difficult because Rangers made such an arse of things earlier in the season. Yeah. So you only have yourself to blame for the position that you're in. I might be the only person here, and I'd be interested if anybody else thinks the same. I think it actually might suit Rangers playing away to Hearts and playing away to Celtic because they know exactly what's going to face them and the fact that they're going to have to go there and get a result. I think if actually they were playing, I would find games away to the other teams more problematic than I would do if Rangers had managed to get Hearts and Celtic at home. You know, the Celtic game takes care of itself simply because it was always going to be at Celtic Park. There was never going to be any doubt in that one. Hearts game, well, you take what you get, but I still think that work behind them when they might actually need to break down 10 guys who never leave the edge of their own penalty box. So with that in mind, I just think you've got to, it's like heavyweight boxers. You just have to knock out whoever stands in front of you. It doesn't matter whether they're, you know, a couple of stone heavier, you're a couple of inches taller, you've still got to knock them out. And I think that's where Rangers are at now. And thankfully, they're now starting to produce performances. And it might make Rory McIlroy's performance in the last couple of days look relatively sane. But ultimately, you have to win these matches and just go week from week. If you make a mistake, be rest assured others are going to make slip-ups as well. So it's going to be one of those whole things from now to the end of the season. There's going to be as much psychology in these games about when you play, when the opposition play, who you're up against. It's almost going to be more mind games than it is actually 90 minutes on the pitch.
I mean, you spoke about crowds there. I listened to the Celtic game on the radio yesterday, and that crowd is nervous. They're playing a St Mirren team who have just lost their manager. All right, they've won a couple of games lately. But, I mean, come on, it's St Mirren at home. Out of all the games that they have left, that's the one that you would have been expecting them to win convincingly by three or four goals. That crowd is nervous, and that's even with the Green Brigade and whatnot back in the stadium. There was a moment, I think it was about 10 minutes before the end of the game, where, you know, like if you can concede a goal at Ibrox and then there's a sort of dejection and then a few seconds later everyone goes, hey, yeah, come on, and the claps. St Mirren had like a half chance, I think, for like a corner and the ball went wide. And then there was like a moment of dejection from Celtic fans and then you could hear a few of them doing that. Oh, come on, blah, 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 blah. That's a home game against St Mirren. They're doing that against when St Mirren have missed a chance. Now, if we can do that and rattle that crowd in a few weeks' time, I'm confident that we can go and win that game. We've already done it before this season. And even Hearts fans, I mean, I know people might think that out of the three, Hearts have maybe had the most United sort of fan base. There's moments as well. Like I noticed that, was it the Hibs game where they won the last minute? There was another game at home that they won quite late on as well. But their fans are starting to get really nervous as well. So, I mean, psychologically, if we can go to these places and try and wind up the crowd and keep them silent for as long as we can, I think it puts us in a great position.
I mean, there's much written and people have said a great deal. I will say it for the umpteenth time. People are really excited by the race for this title. Whoever wins this will be the least bad of three teams. I don't think any of them are particularly great. Reference has been made back to 1983. That Celtic team was a good team back in 1983, trust me. Aberdeen were a very good team in 1983 and Dundee United were an extremely good team. And that's why it was tight. It wasn't because they were picking up the scraps that the others had left. All three of them were winning. And if you actually look at it, I think Dundee United won by a point. Okay, it was only 2 points for a win back then. But Dundee United won by a single point and Aberdeen and Celtic finished tied. I think this season, you know, if you're saying that Celtic are not great, trust me, I speak to enough Celtic fans that would tell you how bad this is, the worst Celtic team that they've seen in an eternity. Come back to the one that, you know, Lou Macari had in the early 90s, which tells you everything you need to know about Celtic. And again, I've said it to Hearts fans, this Hearts side's a great side. Oh, really? So if you had to pick the team in 1986 that blew it in the last day of the season, or this team, what team would you take? Well, I'd take the 1986. So therefore, the standard has gone down markedly. So you would still take it, and you would still be joyous, and you'd still celebrate. But I think the reality has to be that if you win it this season, you could just as easily lose it next season if you went into the same squad.
No, I completely agree on that one. And I mean, obviously Rangers and Celtic have had terrible seasons, but Hearts have had a good season and Hearts are overperforming, you know, to what they should normally. But when you look at it, when you average out the points, I think Hearts would be on for like 82 points or something like that. 82 points does they win you a league 9 seasons out of 10. So no. As much as they're having a good season and 82 points would be a comfortable third, maybe second place. The only reason that they're top right now is, as you say, because Rangers and Celtic have been so bad.
And the only reason they've got this split is because Scottish football doesn't take itself serious enough. You know, that and that's it in its entirety. The whole thing about Scottish football is everything has to be, you have to be able to divide it by four, otherwise you don't look at it. So, you know, come back, get your marketing people and your television people and all the rest of it to do a decent job. You could play a league with 16 teams, you know, if you really wanted to, and play 30 games a season if you were really commercially viable. They can't do that. All the wee teams are having an occasion called them diddy teams. But the diddy teams won 4 games a season against the old firm, whether you like that or not, and therefore the tail wags the dog. It's not good. It's not conducive for producing players, simply because, you know, a matter of weeks after they've kicked somebody off the park, they're back on the park trying to kick you off the pitch. It's not good. The amount of players that I've spoken to has come into Scottish football over a great many years, and I'm talking about guys from Italy, the Netherlands, especially south of the border, even guys in Ireland. They look at it and say to themselves, after 2 seasons or 3 seasons, you're drained, you want to move. It's not a case of that you're not playing any better. You might be playing better, you make a move because you have been playing quite well. But those moves are easier, something because people are bored of Scottish football and the whole context of Scottish football. When you get somebody like Dundee United and their fans are on the pitch a couple of seasons ago celebrating finishing sixth, I mean, because they beat the split. Well, what is that about, finishing sixth and celebrating? I mean, I know it's a big deal if you're kind of cash strapped and don't have any money, or if you're looking for, if you need a game against Celtic or a game against Rangers to make to balance out the books. But it's no great, and I honestly, this whole thing about this split, it divides opinion. It not only divides opinion, it feeds the conspiracy theorists no end. It's like giving them, you know, morphine, speed, LSD, you know, marijuana, anything else you want to feed into their system just to go off in one. But it's not a great look for Scottish football. Years ago when it came in, people said, well, they do it in Poland. All right, they do it in Poland. They also eat some strange things in Poland. Any of my Polish friends out there, some of them are quite tasty, I have to say. But you know what I mean? It's not a great look for Scottish football, and I really wish somebody would be big enough and brave enough to increase the top flight in Scotland to 18 teams, forget about the rest, you know, playing grass pitches, and that's to be big and bold and brave about how good your product is.
Nah, the split's terrible. Or certainly the way that we do it anyway, because, I mean, it's unfair for most teams, isn't it? Because you're going to get lumped with three games away at one team, three home games against another. We've probably had it the worst, I think, out of the top three teams this year, but there have been seasons in the past where we have benefited from it if you're playing three teams at home. But it's as you say, it feeds a conspiracy theories. One thing that you could maybe do, I think it's the Danish league that do this. They've got a 14-team league. You play each other twice, and then the top seven and the bottom seven split, and then you play each other in your top seven or bottom seven section twice more. Yeah. So you're, the four games a season you're playing, it's not against, you know, like Livingston and Ross County or whatnot. It's against the teams around you that are actually competing. And I mean, it's a way to still have a split, but you know, it's also a way to kind of make sure that you're going to be playing the better teams more often, and also it takes away that sort of ambiguity of it all.
But how could Scottish football ever learn from what's happening overseas? How could you ever learn by what's going on in Denmark? You know, a nation that actually won the European Championships, a nation that has produced the Loudrops and several other fantastically brilliant players in the last, you know, 40 years. How could you ever learn from Denmark, you know, that constantly have teams playing Champions League football, you know, after the qualifiers? I mean, that would mean actually somebody boarding a flight and actually going and seeing what happens in Denmark, and probably the SPFL can't afford to do something like that. They'll just need to wait until it appears in one of the tabloid newspapers before they have that idea. Listen, there's loads of ways to make things better out there. I still think years ago, Hamilton Accies were one of the few teams that actually got it right. You know, when he's Alex Neil in the midfield and me, Billy Reid, was the manager, and he put in the two Jameses either side, Alex Neil, and said, right, if we're going to get relegated, we're going to get relegated playing some decent football and try to develop some players. And lo and behold, you know, McCarthy and MacArthur ended up going to England and having hugely successful careers down south with Wigan and Crystal Palace and Aston Villa and whoever else it was. You know, so it can be done. Players are there, as I said earlier. But I just think it needs to be a kind of rethink about Scottish football. Forget the excitement. Forget how, you know, tantalising it is. Forget, you know, the drama. The drama is caused by mediocrity and nothing else.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I'd certainly put myself forward to volunteer for that position to fly out to Denmark. I love Denmark, so if it's an all expenses paid trip, especially with the price of beers there, I will happily volunteer. Neil Doncaster, I'll be your guinea pig, mate. I'll be your guinea pig for that one.
There is some. We're now. If there's anybody out there doing profiling, and Craig, a man who likes car parks and Denmark, I'll tell you, you're moving up the league here when it comes to potential psychos.
Denmark's a wonderful country, Stuart. It's wonderful. Back to the football. Eventually, we got another goal from Miovsky, and we decide to, you know, make things difficult for ourselves again. Tav gives away. It's just a stupid challenge. Such a stupid thing to do. And I know we've mentioned him already tonight, Stuart, and you know, his defensive woes at times, but, you know, he's still an experienced player. He's a captain. You know, it just baffles me that he's making a stupid decision like that in such a vital game. They score the penalty, but, you know, thankfully, Miovski and Chermiti score later on. But it was just a really, really stupid decision for him, and I was really disappointed in him with it.
Listen, in a different generation or in a different solar system somewhere, he wouldn't have played the number of games he's played for Rangers. He wouldn't be the Rangers captain. You know, it's almost indicative of where Rangers have found themselves in the last 10 years, that he has been a mainstay of that Rangers team and somebody who's actually, Rangers have actually relied on in the last 10 years. Defensively, he is an utter shambles. And there is no other word for it. The amount of mistakes he makes, others will come out and say, oh, he scored crucial goals. But he's had to score some of those crucial goals because of the ones he's let in, or the ones he's conceded, or the one he's been party to make the mistake for. It wasn't good. And I know you have to say, well, that's the way he plays the game. There will be better players out there, and we've seen them, actually, some of them at Ibrox, and they've moved on, and he's actually managed to remain. So until the end of this season, you're stuck with him. You'll continue to do a job, whether it's a good, bad, or indifferent one. And, you know, most Rangers fans would celebrate if he was the guy who was lifting the title and the trophy at the end of the season. And I think most people would put their name to a farewell letter or a get, you know, or a good luck letter and saying, right, you've done your bit, now it's time to move on a high.
Well, that's it. And I mean, 5 games of the season left, perfect scenario for him is him being out of contract. You know, I mean, I don't know where he'll fit in the next 5 games, to be honest. I think he's probably going to be looking at Sterling as the first choice.
Sorry, can I just come in here? Somebody made a comment, big shug. Sky want 4 Old Firm games, and the size of the league will never change because of that.
You still get four Old Firm games, but we're at 14-team league.
But the Scottish Premier League came into existence in 75-76 season when there wasn't such a thing as Sky. So don't serve that up as an excuse for 4 Old Firm games. It's only an excuse because they want the money out of them, out of Sky or any broadcaster. Remember when it was Setanta? Oh, I let's go with them rather than the BBC because they've got a fancy name. So that whole thing about Sky, it just shows you that everything is based in Scottish football around money, and nobody's brave enough to actually improve the quality of the football at the expense of bringing cash in. And for people to say, "Ah, well, Scottish football just wouldn't be the same," hey, listen, go and see the teams that are not attractive enough or basically are full of tractor drivers. They wouldn't exist if it was actually down to football. Some of the teams, actually, you might get a shock at how good they actually were if it wasn't down to wages and all the rest of it. So, you know, I just don't buy into that or subscribe to that theory or that thinking. And there's one or two other people who were involved with Scottish football for a lengthy time as well would actually tell you the same thing.
Yeah. Even if there was a short-term financial hit, I mean, you don't think long-term you would financially benefit from having a better league? Because
of course you would.
You'll get teams improving, going further in Europe, getting more prize money. You can sell it to the TV companies as well. So, I mean,
you'd also get teams giving youth a chance. You'd also get teams actually holding on to players because they knew that the best way forward was to keep that talent, and they would only sell that talent at a premium if somebody big came in from Scotland or somebody big came in from England, the way it used to be. Scottish football is, I don't care what anybody says, and people might point a finger at Rangers bringing in Souness and him moving the goalposts and all the rest of it. If they wanted to do that, fair enough, because they would have an argument. But Scottish football are basically looking for guys who, rather than being sprinters or triple jumpers or hurdlers who really need a technical skill, they're just looking for guys that have decathletes. They can do, or is comfortable doing the shot put or throwing a hammer as they are running 100 metres. And that is it. That is a problem. They're bringing in guys who survive in no other league. They leave Scottish football and they go south of the border again. What league do they go to? They go to the first division or the second division, or disappear abroad somewhere where their size and their bulk and their regression is actually wanted. Nobody moves south again, comes up here, then moves south based on their ability or their skills. It just doesn't happen.
Well, I seen John Lindstrom was apologising yesterday for making a mistake that he was prone to making in the Rangers shirt. So he's another example of another guy that, I mean, obviously had that moment against Leipzig, and he did have moments in the Rangers jersey. You could see he's talented, but
yeah, but so did his bank balance. So did his bank balance. His bank balance. His bank balance was greatly enhanced by coming to Scottish football or coming to Rangers, because it was the only place he was going to actually get that money for the job that he was actually doing. So, you know, in the 100 players that have moved to Rangers and carved out a niche for themselves in Scottish football, having moved to Rangers from England, he might at best be in the low 90s.
Mm-hmm. No, I'd agree with that. Finish up then on the striking situation. Bojan Miloszewski's had an up and down season, but you know, generally speaking, he's not got a bad goal record considering the amount of minutes that he's actually played. Got another two today. I know you would play the two up front for the rest of the season, but after Chermiti's double as well today, you're going into the next game. If he is going to play one up front, it's great to have that conundrum where you've got now two strikers finally starting to hit form at the right time. And also as well, we've got history of this, guys like Kyle Lafferty, who only showed up for about 4 weeks between April and May in a Rangers jersey.
Hi.
If Bojan Miloszewski and Chermiti want to do that for the next 4 weeks, that's absolutely fine by me.
Yeah, I mean, and again, you can spend all night discussing and debating Rangers past Rangers teams. I still think Rangers teams with two strikers have always performed better than the teams that have just had one. And I know people will say, well, there was a time when McCoist was injured and Rangers had played with Haley up front and Durant in support. Yeah, sometimes needs must. But if you're looking for a successful times where Rangers play with like one striker, I think it's far outweighed or beaten into second place the times that Rangers have had two effective strikers. You know, whether it was McCoist and Johnson, whether it was Brandon Miller, Parlane and Johnson, you go back through history, Rangers players or Rangers strikers playing as a pair have always been hugely successful. And it did actually, there's always an act of desperation just now in recent times when managers have played two strikers, because it usually means that Rangers need goals and need goals desperately. But I do wonder sometimes if you actually take the game to the opposition, how much confusion would it be if you'd actually been training all week expecting to face one striker and that striker to be Trinity, and suddenly you get two to watch? You know, I was speaking to enough footballers and ex-footballers, they'll always tell you that marking two guys is far, far more difficult than marking one guy, unless that one guy happens to be Gabriel Batistuta or Jurgen Klinsmann or something like that. But even Jurgen Klinsmann played with somebody beside him in Rudi Völler. So, you know, players play off each other. I just think that some of the times you see Rangers, and we'll all have seen it, Rangers are playing with one striker, the ball breaks in the box and goes to nobody other than a defensive boot, and it disappears back down the park again. You know, even living off scraps, some guys could have made a really good living being the second Rangers striker as long as they were on the pitch. And I think that's quite frustrating at times for Rangers fans especially.
Yeah. Finally then, where does it leave us in the title race? Are you confident the next five games that we're going to do it at? I'll put my cards on the table. I think we're going to do it. I think we're hitting form at the right time. There is still the wee niggling doubt in me. Just a wee one.
Admit it. It's coming to the usual Sunday night counselling session. A wee bit of doubt. It's a huge doubt.
Watch this. Motherwell will beat us in a couple of weeks and I'll be like that. I told you from the beginning this team was crap and this, that, and the next thing. But no, I'm going to try and be positive. We have scored a lot of goals in the last few games. I think we're hitting form at the right time. So I think out of all three of the teams, we have been the least bad, I would say, especially recently. So I'll be positive on that one.
I'll give you two answers. Can Rangers do it? Yes, they can. They've shown enough, I think, over the last few weeks, months, that they can actually do it. Will they do it? That's entirely in their own hands. And forget the results that Hearts get and the results that Celtic get. Rangers, the last thing that Rangers want to happen, or the last thing, the last place that Rangers want to be is for them to hand the title to somebody else because they didn't do it on the pitch. It's that simple. You go out and do it. I was speaking to somebody during the week, I won't name names, and we were talking about Rangers playing Aberdeen the last game of the season. Now, the mindset of the Rangers team that day, when if Aberdeen had turned up and got a 0-0 draw, they were the champions. The mindset that day was that if somebody at the start of the season had said, you need to turn up at home in the last game of the season and win, and you've won the title, would you take it? And everybody said yes. Everybody bought into it. Now, that was a far better Rangers team than Rangers have had in the last 10 years. It was a far better Aberdeen team than they've had in the last 30 years. But Rangers did it. Why? Because they believed they could actually do it, and they believed they actually would win that match. And I still think that Rangers have to generate a belief that they can do it, rather than hoping that somebody else will slip up, that means they will do it. And I'm still shy of about 20% confidence-wise that they have that inbred desire or that inbred ability to actually go and do it for themselves. I think they've let themselves down time and time and time again this season. I touch wood that you're joking about the Motherwell result. But, you know, that for me, Rangers have to do it. If Rangers do their bit, then they'll win the title. If they can't do it for themselves, don't expect any favours from other teams, because if other teams can't beat Celtic and Hearts, they probably deserve the title more than you do.
Yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head there in terms of it. It's all in our own hands. We are the masters of our own destiny for this season. You've got five games. If you win every game 1-0, you end the season with the league. Just go and win the games. Try and do them in a bit of style, but just go and win the games. And we've spoke about how inconsistent and how poor we've been for most of the season. If we go back to Falkirk in the 16th of May and we're lifting that trophy, no one will give a toss about how bad the performances were earlier this season, or Russell Martin, or anything like that. No one will care because we would be the champions. So just go and win the next five games.
Don't rely in the last game. Don't rely on winning 6-3 in the last game.
I don't think I would take it anyway. But we did see the sign earlier. Sure, you said it there about belief. We seen the keep believing sign earlier, as Big Marvin Andrews said, 21 years ago. So I don't know if I could quite take another finish like that, but if it ends with us lifting the league, then I don't really care how it finishes, just as long as that happens.
Come back, Marvin.
Aye, game of coaching, no. I think that's a good one to finish up on there, Stuart. Don't think there'll be any shows next week due to our uneventful Scottish Cup campaign where nothing happened. So all the players are on a jolly to Spain. So hopefully they go out and, you know, enjoy themselves, but they do it disciplined, as Mr. Neil Warnock has said in the past. But actually, T on that one, Stuart, quickly before we finish up, what's your thoughts on this sort of end of season training camp away, because you get knocked out the Scottish Cup?
Yeah. If you go out there and you get rat arsed and you win the league, nobody will care. If you get there and get rat-arsed and you fail, the fickle finger of fate will be pointing at several people and showing them the door. If you get there and you say, I've had a brilliant camp, and you don't deliver on the pitch, it won't matter a jot. You're between a rock and a hard place. You're damned if you do and damned if you don't. If it means they're getting a bit of sun on their back and they're able to train and lounge about, away from the pressures of being in the Scottish context, great. They could have done that by giving the players a week off, because there's nothing happening next week. And trust me, a bit of retail therapy for some of these players would be better than being away from their loved ones for a week in Spain. So it'll be interesting to see how Rangers come back. History tells you that away weeks in the sun, when everybody else is in the hall or everybody else is doing something else, hasn't always worked in Rangers to Rangers' advantage. You know, Rangers players, and in the past, Rangers players getting 2-3 days off rather than coming into training was just as good as it was going for a training session in Portugal or Spain and or Florida. So listen, I'll be where it is. Only time will tell, but I hope it works in our favour.
Yep, don't we all, mate? But that will be a good one to finish up on then. So thanks very much for joining me, Stuart. It's been a pleasure as always.
It has. I'll get back to the golf now. Thanks for keeping me.
Yeah, not a problem, mate. Not a problem. And thanks to the viewers at home. We'll be back in a couple of weeks to preview the Motherwell game, where hopefully we can get another result. But thanks for now, guys. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.